Blog Talk Radio.
There's a little song that we sing in our movement down in the South. I don't know if you've heard it, but it has become the theme song. We shall overcome. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. Though I join hands so often with students and others behind jail bars singing it, we shall overcome. Sometimes we've had tears in our eyes when we joined together to sing it, but we still decided to sing it. We shall overcome. No, before this victory's won, some will have to get thrown in jail some more, but we shall overcome. Don't worry about us. Before the victory's won, some of us will lose jobs, but we shall overcome. Before the victory's won, even some will have to face physical death. But if physical death is the price that some must pay to free their children from a permanent psychological death, then nothing shall be more redemptive. We shall overcome. Before the victory's won, some will be misunderstood and called bad names and dismissed as rabble-rousers and agitators. But we shall overcome. And I'll tell you why. We shall overcome because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. We shall overcome because Carlyle is right. No lie can live forever. We shall overcome because William Cullen Bryant is right. Truth crushed to earth will rise again. We shall overcome because James Russell Lowell is right. Truth forever on the scaffold, wrong forever on the throne. Yet that scaffold sways the future. Behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. We shall overcome because the Bible is right. You shall reap what you sow. We shall overcome. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome. And with this faith, we will go out and adjourn the councils of despair and bring new light into the dark chambers of pessimism. And we will be able to rise from the fatigue of despair to the buoyancy of hope. And this will be a great America. We will be the participants in making it so. And so as I leave you this evening, I say, walk together, children. Don't you get weary. There's a great camp meeting in the park.
Injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes, yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages. America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. But the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land.
Thank you.
tell you something fantastic is happening for you in May. So thank God for Jesus. And I want you to get ready for a breakthrough. If God needs you, plant that seed. As you plant that seed, it's going to grow. The harvest is going to come. This is seeding time. Whatever you need, you plant that seed. When you plant that seed, a breakthrough, quick, fast, and in a hurry. You can call me at 708-582-0372. And you can always understand that God got a breakthrough. Said, thank you. You might not understand why you're saying thank you, but I'm praying for you and you tonight. Let's go back. Thank you. Monday, Martin Luther King Jr. Movement Night.
Thank you. 22 million black people who are the victims of democracy. Nothing but disguised hypocrisy. So I'm not standing here speaking to you as an American or a patriot or a flag saluter or a flag waver. No, not I. I'm speaking as a victim of this American system. I see America through the eyes of a victim. I don't see any American dream. I see an American nightmare. The next thing you'll see here in America, and please don't blame it on me when you see it. You will see the same thing that has taken place among other people on this earth whose condition was parallel to that of the 22 million Afro-Americans in this country. The tide is on the side of the oppressed today. It's against the oppressor. And truth is on the side of the oppressed today. It's against the oppressor. You don't need anything else. I would just like to say this in my conclusion. You'll see it. You'll see terrorism that will terrify you. And if you don't think you see it, you are trying to blind yourself to the historic development of everything that's taking place on this earth today. You'll see other things. Why will you see them? Because as soon as people realize that it's impossible for a chicken to produce a duck egg, even though they both belong to the same family of fowl, so-called fowl, a chicken just doesn't have it within its system to produce a duck egg. It can't do it. It can only produce according to what that particular system was constructed to produce. The system of this country cannot produce freedom for an Afro-American. For this system, this economic system, this political system, this social system, this system, period, it is impossible for it, as it stands, to produce freedom right now for the black man in this country. It's impossible. And if ever a chicken did produce a duck egg, I'm quite sure you'd say that it was certainly a revolutionary
Well, we're justified in seeking civil rights if it means equality of opportunity, because all we're doing there is trying to collect for our investment. Our mothers and fathers invested sweat and blood. 310 years we worked in this country without a dime in return. I mean without a dime in return. You let the white man walk around here talking about how rich this country is. But you never stop to think how it got rich so quick. It got rich, you made it rich. You take the people who are in this audience right now, they're poor, we're all poor, as individuals. Our weekly salary individually amounts to hardly anything. But if you take the salary of everyone in here collectively, it'll fill up a whole lot of baskets. It's a lot of wealth. If you can collect the wages of just these people right here for a year, you'll be rich, richer than rich. When you look at it like that, think how rich Uncle Sam had to become. Not for this handful, but millions of black people, your and my mother and father, who didn't want to eat our shit, but work from can't see in the morning until can't see at night. And work for nothing. Making the white man rich. Making Uncle Sam rich. This is our investment. This is our contribution. Our blood. Not only did we give of our free labor, we gave of our blood. Every time he had a call to arms, we were the first ones in uniform. We died on every battlefield the white man had. We have made a greater sacrifice
that anybody who's standing up in America today, we have made a greater contribution and have collected less. Have collected less. Civil rights and all the rest of whose philosophy is black nationalism means give it to us now. Don't even wait next year. Give it to us yesterday. And that's not fast enough. All these crackers, and that's what they are, crackers, they belong to the Democratic Party. That's the party they belong to.
Same one you belong to. Same one you support. Same one you say is going to get you this and get you that.
Why, the base of the Democratic Party is in the South. If the foundation of its authority is in the South. The head of the Democratic Party is sitting in the White House. He could have gotten Mrs. Hamer in Atlantic City. He could have opened up his mouth and had her seated. Hubert Humphrey could have opened his mouth and had her seated. Wagner, the mayor right here, could have opened up his mouth and used his weight and had her seated. Don't be talking about some crackers down in Mississippi and Alabama and Georgia. They're all of them are playing the same game. Lyndon B. Johnson is the head of the cracker party. Now, I don't want to be stepping on toes or saying things that you didn't think I was going to say. But don't ever, ever, ever call me up here to talk about Mississippi. It's controlled right up here from the north. Mississippi is controlled from the north. Alabama is controlled from the north. These northern crackers are in cahoots with the southern crackers. Only these northern crackers smile in your face and show you their teeth. And they stick the knife in your back when you turn around. You at least know what that man down there is doing, and you know how to deal with him. So all I say is this. This is all I say. That when you start talking about one, talk about the other. When you start worrying about the part or the piece, worry about the whole. And if this piece is no good, the entire pie is no good because it all comes out of the same plate and it's made up out of the same ingredients. Article number 2 of the Constitutional Amendment provides you and me the right to own a rifle or a shotgun. It's constitutionally legal to own a shotgun or a rifle. This doesn't mean you're going to get a rifle and form battalions and go out looking for white folks, although you'll be within your rights. I mean, you'd be justified, but that would be illegal. And we don't do anything illegal. If the white man doesn't want the black man buying rights and shotguns, then let the government do its job. That's all. And don't let the white man come to you and ask you, what do you think about what Malcolm said? Why, you old Uncle Tom? Shoulders this wide, chest this big, muscles that big.
sit around and read where they bomb a church and murder in cold blood, not some grown-ups, but four little girls, while they're praying to the same God the white man taught them to pray to. And you and I see the government go down there and can't find who did. Why, this man found Eichmann while he was hiding down in Argentina somewhere.
I have great respect and admiration for one who has the nerve to tie his own hands and then walk out and let a group brutalize him. I have to respect him because he's doing something that I don't understand. What he's doing is beyond my power even to comprehend. It would be equivalent to putting handcuffs on me and putting me in the ring and telling me to fight Cassius Clay or Sonny Liston non-violently. I don't think I could do it. And whoever could do it, I have to, you know, power to it. But all I'm saying is this. When you're in Mississippi, whenever you're dealing with an enemy, you have to be able to, there must be some dialogue. You have to be able to communicate. You can't, and the medium of communication usually is language. You must speak the language that the other person understands. When you're in Mississippi, speaking the language of morality or the language of nonviolence, you're not communicating. You're talking a language that they don't understand. All I suggest is, and I don't suggest that there's condemnation of Coco or Smith. I know too many of them. They're brave students, men, and all of that. All I'm saying is, since your approach, as you say, is tactical. A tactical approach is designed to get certain results. It's designed to keep you alive. It's designed to bring about victory. Why, we just can't say that victory has been brought about. Let me tell you something. I was over in Africa, and I read what they did to them. They said that they beat that black one to death. They shot the other two. They said they beat every bone. Every bone was broken. Now, you know what? I think people who tell our people to be nonviolent are almost agents of the Ku Klux Klan. Up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers, and by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungle, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, much less call us an African. And in hating Africa and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. To the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding of, an attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you'll find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate our African identity, our African characteristics. And you know yourself that we have been a people who hated our African characteristics. We hated our hair. We hated the shape of our nose. We wanted one of those long, dog-like noses, you know. Yeah. We hated the color of our skin. Hated the blood of Africa that was in our veins. And in hating our features and our skin and our blood, why we had to end up hating ourselves. And we hated ourselves. Our color became, to us, a chain. We felt that it was holding us back. Our color became to us like a prison, which we felt was keeping us confined, not letting us go this way or that way. And we felt that all of these restrictions were based solely upon our color. And the psychological reaction to that would have to be that as long as we felt imprisoned or chained or trapped by black skin, black features and black blood, that skin and those features and that blood that was holding us back automatically had to become hateful to us. And it became hateful to us. It made us feel inferior. It made us feel inadequate. It made us feel helpless. And when we fell victim to this feeling of inadequacy or inferiority or helplessness, we turned to somebody else to show us the way. We didn't have confidence in another black man to show us the way or black people to show us the way. In those days, we didn't. We didn't think a black man could do anything but play some harp, you know, some sound, and make you happy with some songs. And in that way, but when an inferior thing, where our food, clothing, and shelter was concerned, and our education was concerned, we turned to the man. We never thought in terms of bringing these things into existence for ourselves. We never thought in terms of doing things for ourselves because we felt helpless. And what made us feel helpless was our hatred for ourselves. And our hatred for ourselves stemmed from our hatred of things that.
To understand this, you have to go back to what young brother here referred to as the house Negro and the field Negro back during slavery. There was two kinds of slaves. There was the house Negro and the field Negro. The house Negro, they lived in the house with master. They dressed pretty good. They ate good because they ate his food. But he left. They lived in the attic or the basement. But still they lived near their master. And they loved their master more than the master loved himself. They would give their life to save their master's house quicker than the master would. The house Negro, the master said, we got a good house here. The house Negro said, yeah, we got a good house here. Whenever the master said we, he said we. That's how you could tell a house Negro. If the master's house caught on fire, the house Negro would fight harder to put the blaze out than the master would. If the master got sick, the house Negro would say, what's the matter, boss? We sick. We sick. He identified himself with his master more than his master identified with himself. And if you came to the house Negro and said, let's run away. Let's escape. Let's separate. The house Negro would look at you and say, man, you crazy. What do you mean separate? Where is there a better house than this? Where can I wear better clothes than this? Where can I eat better food than this? That was that house Negro. In those days, he was called a house nigger. And that's what we call him today because we still got some house niggers running around here. This modern house Negro loves his master. He wants to live near him. He'll pay three times as much as the house is worth just to live near his master. And then brag about I'm the only Negro out here. I'm the only one on my job. I'm the only one in this school, you nothing but a house Negro. And if someone come to you right now and say, let's separate, you say the same thing that the house Negro said on the plantation. What you mean, separate? From America? This good white man? When are you going to get a better job than you get here? I mean, this is what you say. I ain't left nothing in Africa. That's what you say. Why, you left your mind in Africa.
Mountain Performance TV, the hardest working software in television.
Ladies and gentlemen, from Madison Square Garden in New York City, Michael Jackson, 30th anniversary celebration.
Get up.
with appearances by Mark Anthony, Deborah Cox, Destiny Giles, Gloria Estefan, Billy Gilman, Whitney Houston, James Ingram, Samuel L. Jackson, Liza Minnelli, Monica, Maya, 98 Degrees, NSYNC, Rod Digga, Shaggy featuring Rick Ross, Flash, Tamia, Elizabeth Taylor, Chris Tucker, Hunter, Luther Vandross, and performing for the first time in almost two decades, The Jackson. Plus an electrifying solo set by the king of pop himself, Michael Jackson. 30th anniversary celebration. Ladies and gentlemen, even the king of Michael Jackson classic fan, Mr. Billy Gilman.
Buttery, flaky ribs.
Here's how
on soup becomes irresistible. Nothing fits. Like a rib.
They were the biggest music acts in the world, all headed to Doritos Music Fest 86 when they disappeared.
Yeah.